Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Susan Tebos. Welcome to the show, Susan. Great to meet you. And thank you for your patience with the technical glitches. I'm glad to have you on the show.
Thanks. It's so good to be with you. And yeah, we got it. We got the technical glitches figured out. So.
We're there.
Let's do it.
So Susan is an adoptive mum of three. If I remember correctly, your kids are all in their early 20s, is that right?
Yes, 20, 23 and 24, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So thriving adoptees, what comes to your mind, Susan, when you hear those two words, thriving adoptees? What comes to your mind?
From my experience as an adoptive mom, helping my three adopted kiddos to thrive has been a journey. And I would say to help them thrive, I had a lot to learn. And I felt like I was learning on the job, if you will. Even though I feel like I immerse myself in books about the various issues that adoptees can experience, it's another thing to meet it head on in a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's the difference between theory and practice, right? So in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice. But in practice, there's a gulf of difference between what it says in the books and what it comes to, how it comes to raising adopted kids, right?
Right. I think what is really important, or at least what I felt was important, that each one of my kids processed their relinquishment differently. And there's no one set formula. And so what I learned along the way is that just like they have their own love language, or just like the big thing now is Enneagrams or whatever, they process loss differently. And because of that, we have to meet them individually where they're at. But there's also some common essential things that parents can just do on a day-to-day basis to help them thrive emotionally. Because when they thrive emotionally, I think they do better overall. I mean, it affects how they think about themselves, whether they feel they belong. It affects their self-esteem and their future plans. And so it's an important part of parenting adoptees is, you know, being equipped on one hand with the books, but also practicing it and finding out what it is that allows you to connect well with each of your children. Like in our case, because we have three.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you use this word process at the top of that. For me, kind of like if we think of a process, we think of like a scientific approach, don't we? A scientific process. And what you're actually alluding to is far more about, it's far more like an art than it is a science. It's about, as you say, tuning into each individual child's need, fine tuning your communication and your way of connecting with your kids individually. Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely. Connecting individually is just meeting them where they're at, instead of us feeling like we have all the answers as moms and dads, because frankly, at least for me, I'm a fixer and I'm really working on that. And what I think that fixer in me says, I just want my kids to be okay. And so, but they have to do the work to be okay. And we have to facilitate that and give them permission on this journey. So when I use the word process or journey, I think it's they're both kind of interchangeable in that regard.
Yeah. So you talked about thriving emotionally and that being the kind of the core of the issue as far as you see it. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
About
Thriving
the
emotionally.
emotional journey, yeah, journey, the how they're feeling, what they're thinking. Yeah, for instance, my daughter is a good example. She was at a camp when she was 14, and there was some sort of activity they did where they had to write about how they felt about themselves, and they ended up kind of boiling it down and putting it onto one little cardboard, small little cardboard piece, I guess you'd call it, with a Sharpie, with a black Sharpie. And you know, she had that. I never knew she had that. It was hidden in her drawer. And so when she was 17 and she knew I was writing a book, she came to me and handed this envelope to me. And inside it, I pulled that, you know, little rough cardboard piece out, and inside of it said, not good enough. And for a mother who felt I was connecting well with her, and we have a wonderful relationship, and yet for her to be carrying the burden of feeling not enough since she was 14 years old, that's 3 years of her dwelling on this, the way she felt it, you know, we can go down the road, it was a lie, but to her it felt real. And so when that card was given to me, it was like a gift, that she was willing to open up and finally explain things to me. But at the same time, I felt a little like, how come I wasn't involved with this when you were 13? And that's where I really heightened my awareness of the need for our kids to have permission to speak their hearts to us. And we need, as parents, to be that safe space for them. And if I may continue, just one more thing here is that quite often our teens don't, and young, you know, younger than that, they just don't have the words to articulate what's going on, or they just blow it off because they're busy in athletics and in choir and with friends, and they don't see the value of, hey, let's, you know, let's just spend time unpacking this. And so I think we have to, again, journey with them, and we have to be proactive in that.
Yeah. See, I think for me, not feeling good enough is the central issue for pretty much every human. Not just adoptees, right? I thought that this may sound a little bit nuts, listeners, but I thought I had the monopoly on not feeling good enough, right? And then I thought adoptees had the monopoly on not feeling good enough. But over the last 13, 14 years, that I've been on my journey, I found out that nobody thinks that they're good enough. So it seems to be the central issue. And, you know, when I say not good enough, I describe this as it's like a if it's insecurity, if insecurity was an ice cream, it would come in a number of different flavors. So there's the not talented enough flavor of not good enough. There's the not successful enough. There's the not thin enough flavor of insecurity. There's another not rich enough. And then there's the deeper bit of like, just don't feel I fit in. Don't feel good enough, and not a good enough mom, not a good enough dad. It seems to be the central issue, and it's a human thing rather than an adoption thing. What's your take on that, Susan?
I think for her, just knowing how it affected her to feel this way, that it undermined a lot of how God created her to be. And I sense that the not good enough, where, you know, that definitely comes from our, you know, Instagram posts and people comparing and looking at perfection, is that these kids who are adopted, I don't think it's that layer as much as it is abandonment. And I feel that they don't understand the impact of having something like that happen to them. And when you boil it down, it's loss. And everybody experiences loss, but when you're at an age, an infant or a two-year-old or even a seven-year-old, and you're adopted and you have been frightened for that change, for that loss of security, and people might say, oh, how do they remember, and they don't know that that happened to them. They do know it. I see it in all three of my kids. I don't think any adoptee is immune to the sense that there is a loss and that there is something missing. And so to come back to that not good enough, I think for at least my daughter, she feels, so what, why wasn't I able to stay with my birth mother and my birth father? And as she's sorting all that out in her head by herself, she's coming up with a lot of inaccurate conclusions.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why we, you know, we have to be parents who connect well. And it's not like they're going to come up to us in this intelligent conversation and say, oh, by the way, I have, abandonment issues. They don't have the vocabulary for that. We have to have some sense that our kids are going through something. And it may be, at least what I've found out through writing my book and interviewing a bunch of adoptees between the ages of 15 and 30, is that there is such a range of responses. Again, going back to that comment earlier about, hey, our kids don't all respond the same way to what happened to them. And so as I look at that range, I realize, oh, some may have questions that need to be answered. Some may want support in searching for a birth mother, birth family member. That may be on one end of the continuum. And then you go to the other end of the continuum and you have mental health challenges that are anchored in fear and unstable attachment and other things that can surface. And then you have all kinds of responses in between. And I feel like for my children, my kids are in the in-betweeners. They're in between there. They each have a different response. And I think that's important for us parents to really get a handle on that.
So your three, you adopted all three of your kids from Russia, if I remember rightly.
Yes, from Russia. Yep.
And were they in orphanages before, or what was their kind of starting life?
So the starting life, our first one was in a hospital. He was in a city in Siberia, oil drilling type of city, and they didn't have a room maybe in a baby home. In Russia, they have baby homes first for the infants, toddlers up to age 5, and then they move them after that, if they're not adopted, to the larger orphanages. So in that case, he was still in a hospital, but he was 7.5 months old. And so that's pretty traumatic to be in that sterile sort of setting. But also when we arrived there, he was cross-eyed, possibly from birth, but perhaps from staring at the ceiling. He was staring at his hand. He was looking at his hand. It was kind of almost like keeping him entertained. He would suck so wildly on his pacifier. It was just so important to him to have that little passy with him in his hand and in his mouth. So that was, and then of course, when we got him home, we jumped into all the sensory, therapies and the patching of the eyes and the early interventions and the brushing his body for sensory renewal and so many things. So yeah, he's been a miracle. He's absolutely incredible. The other two, so we went 5 times to Russia. And so the other two were in a baby home. It was lovely. It was out in a little country village, and they were attached to those little siblings running around with them that they weren't related to, and they were attached to their caregivers. And so their beginning was more, it was a healthier beginning than in a hospital. But at the same time, they had to leave that behind. And that was another break in that attachment, that sh you know that natural bond that we seek to feel secure. And so that's kind of our that's our backstory. And yeah.
So for me, I think, there's this trauma, this trauma thing, this lack of attachment, and all these, and you've got it's it perhaps manifests itself differently on the back of every individual experience earlier on, right? So I was, so as I've pieced together my story, I was born, my birth mother was sent away to a children, an unwed mother's home, and then she was taken to a hospital to give birth, and then I was in short-term foster care. Then she came to collect me from there when I was 5 weeks old, and she took me to the adoption agency. And after that, I've been with my mum and dad since then. So, the start that we have clearly plays a huge influence, and in terms of how things play out later on. Interesting, when you mentioned about your son sucking on his pacifier, I used to suck on my thumb as a kid a lot, and so to such an extent that I had really bad buck teeth.
No.
the teeth that stick out at the front, because my thumb, the top of my thumb, was jammed between my, my bottom jaw and my top jaw, from sucking my thumb. That's what. So I had to have, well, we call them braces here. What do you call them? Retainers. What do you call them?
Braces.
So
Yeah,
you call
no,
them
we
braces as well. So
braces.
yeah, there's all sorts of sensory, different sensory experiences. There's different backgrounds and there's different things going on for each kid, and that's perhaps why everybody, why everybody's every child is different, because there's like that's there's that difference of their background, and some of this is to do with separation from their birth mother. Some of this is to do with under-stimulation and under-attachment in the settings that they live in before the adoption. It's a myriad of different factors. So all as I say, as you talked about it, adjusting your approach, fine-tuning your approach, and meeting each of your kids where they're at, would seem to be the only way that we can do this, given the fact that they're all different makeup. You could say they've probably all got different genetic makeup. They've got a slightly different start in life. For me, I think the core of what you're talking about is the communication issue. So you're talking about kids not having the words, kids not having the time. You know, they're too busy living their life with all the different activities that they got involved in. This communication issue, what, how do you, and the attachment issue, I'm not sure quite how to ask this question, but can you talk into that a little bit more? Because me and my wife haven't got any kids, so we don't know anything about raising bio kids, never mind adopted kids. What are the some of the things that are important for you in this emotional connection, the communication, and the words. What, talk into that, please, if you could.
Well, I think the hardest part about all of this is that we're entering into it in their teen years. And when teenagers become teenagers, they get a mind of their own. And they don't necessarily, I think they listen to us, but I often laugh because I think they hear us later in life. Like, they hear us, but they also tune us out because they're working on their identity and they're working on, you know, their own way of thinking and all these things. And so I felt like in the teen years that my voice was heard, but it was still pushed away. I felt like there was this pushing away, like a natural pushing away, which is good. But also I needed to work harder then to find connection points with my kids and to also learn to delight in them no matter what, because I look back at how I was raised, and I would say I was raised in a traditional family with a traditional dad who went to work and didn't necessarily interact with me and my siblings. And my mom was always very, you know, comforting and cooking and this and that. But I don't ever recall feeling like I could talk to her. And I felt like I was parented differently back then than I am parenting my children today. And so on purpose, I have to, if my kids get I don't know what the word is, if they get wonky or get angry or whatever about something, it's likely that something's going on behind that behavior. And it could be, like when they're younger, oh, I'm tired or I'm hungry. When they're littler, there's usually something causing that behavior, that burst of anger or irritation or lack of cooperation, whatever you want to call it. But as they get older, it's like there's behaviors that we might interpret as insubordination, or you're out of line, or anger, for reasons I'm using anger because my middle son was an angry teenager. And I confess I didn't always handle it well, because I thought, okay, wait a minute. He walked up the stairs and he's already angry at me, and I haven't even done anything. So I started realizing that how I responded to him in his anger, like if I responded angrily towards him, it would only escalate
Yeah.
the situation, right? So
Of
then
course.
I learned that I had to back away, redirect him to, okay, you need to go outside and ride your bike around the neighborhood, to just blow off some steam. And then I would reconnect after that, because in the moment that's a pretty tough thing to navigate. But all in all, just finding ways where, oh, okay, so this guy loves to cook. Okay, I'll cook with him. It doesn't have to always turn into a conversation. My kids love to travel. Okay, we'll travel with them. We don't always have to connect through words. And yet it does open the door to having conversations. It's almost like we're creating the atmosphere for them to trust us. And the more we connect with them, the more they trust us, and the more I think they will open up. So, I mean, that's kind of a long answer. I'm sorry, but
No,
does that make sense?
it makes total sense. I was listening to a mentor of mine, and this is nothing. It's nothing to do with adoption. He's got, like you, he's got three kids. I think it's probably so you've got from what you've said, I'm guessing you've got two boys and one girl, yeah?
Yeah,
Yeah,
correct.
so he has the other way around. So he has two girls and one boy, and they're probably similar kind of ages to yours. But he was sharing the story about his youngest daughter having being really angry when she was like 6 or 7, and him just and to the extent that she was making holes in walls in her bedroom. And doing a damnedest to make holes in him, make holes in her dad. And he just sat with her, and eventually she calmed down. Perhaps I talked about I was going on about the communication. I'm probably leading down the kind of I'm talking, we're talking about talking. And what you're talking about is actually just being there and being present. And that's what this chap Michael did with his 6-year-old daughter. And he said something like, you're clearly very angry, or whatever he said, to whatever words he would use to 6 or 7 year olds. And that's okay. I'm still here for you. And eventually it calmed down. What I wanted to pick up on is something that you said about your mum and your dad. And my mum and dad were in that stereotype as well. less than communicative dad, should we call it? You know, the dad is doing the bloke thing. We're finding it hard to talk about emotions. We're not being particularly lovey-dovey, you know. And the mum is tradition, just like the stereotypes of the genders. And you also said that you didn't really feel that you can talk to your you didn't feel you could really talk to your mum, despite, is that what you said?
Right. I just remember very specifically a line she would say, and maybe you can resonate with this. Ready?
Yeah.
Go to your room.
Okay.
And so I think there was this, and partly I think, you know, a little bit of that is wise under some circumstances, is to give time to blow off steam, right? Or, you know, like I said to my son, who was angry, you know, go ride a bike, you know, get those endorphins going again or whatever. But, you know, going back to that whole traditional going to your room, I think, we, at least in our family, we try to do the opposite of that and just, yeah, you know, try to engage. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of pressing somebody to find out what's wrong. It's not about pressing in and going, okay, what's wrong, and coming up with a fix. It's more saying like that guy you said with his daughters, that, you know, is validating how they feel. Like, okay, you're angry enough to punch a hole in the wall. I see that. But your anger, so you know, doesn't make me love you any less. And I can handle your anger because I love you. I mean, those types of scripts, I think as parents, we almost have to, you know, write out a handful of scripts. I know it sounds kind of like, I don't know, mechanical, but when we're in the moment with our teens and something's going south, you know, and it's not going well, how we don't often think well on our feet, and neither do they, unless we practice some sort of way that we're going to handle it. Like sometimes my husband and I will debrief on something that just happened before we respond, because we both want to respond differently. And, you know, where my husband might respond better to my son, our son, he doesn't always understand our daughter. And so I have to go, okay, just hold on, settle down, you know, not in her earshot, but in a sense, just together, you know, as we go in and as a team to be consistent and try to respond in a healthier way, you know, to maintain relationship. And I think, again, that relationship, that security is what's going to lend to success in how they move forward in life, that whole thriving piece that you talked about earlier.
Yeah. Genius. This is what learning on the job is about, right? No kids come with manuals, bio kids or adopted kids. And taking time, what people say. What I heard something really great on this. I like little sound bites, you know, responding rather than reacting. So there's a bit of a delay between those two, and that is only ever a good thing in any relationship. What do people also say in terms of, like, yeah, I hear stuff from different parenting gurus, you know, time in rather than time out, you know.
And I
for me, that's a huge one. So one of the things that as adoptees feel is, you know, as you said, the not good, your daughter expressed this not good enough thing, and that is, I felt that. I know other adoptees feel that, but I know that everybody in the human race feels that as well. If there's one emotion felt with that, it is often the most damage, one of the most damaging emotions felt with that is shame. So and shame festers in aloneness, you know, and so being excommunicated, being away from the family unit, being on our own, being you know, being the lion that's excluded from the pack, from the pride, all that stuff just goes to exacerbate that not good enough stuff and the shame. So time out and the shame of sitting on the naughty step, like some people used to advocate, is absolutely nuts and has completely the counter the opposite impact. I want to go back to the stuff with your mum though, because I wanted to express that to some adopted parents who are listening, who, because we tend to I know, having spoken to a lot of adopted parents, is that they tend to hang a lot of teen stuff. They kind of hang teen behavior on adoption. They adoption is the reason, seen as the reason for all the behavior, and adoptees do this as well. It's a really funny thing, sadly funny. I see it in adoptee groups, and it's as bizarre as I stubbed my toe on the bedhead this morning. It's because I'm adopted. They blame people that are in that are struggling with their stuff and their past. Blame everything on the one thing, right? And it's completely off. However, let me go back to this, my point again. So because of your childhood and your teen years, the way that you were raised, it probably has helped you not pin stuff on adoption. You've seen, well, I was raised by my biological mum and dad, and I had this stuff with them. So you've been, I don't know, am I making sense? Do you know where I'm going with this, Susan? I can't really put it into words.
So just, are you saying that maybe I realize that because my children have experienced something that I didn't experience, that I need to step into that and journey with them differently than what, the way I was parented?
No, sorry. I was completely unclear, Susan. Right. Let me take another go at it. Right. So some people might think, so if I'm trying to put this delicately, right? So people, adoptive parents who weren't told to go to their room and felt that they could talk to their parents, might see their adopted kids' unwillingness to open up to them as an adoption thing. But because you didn't have that with your parents, you know it's a kid thing, not an adoption thing.
It is a kid thing, definitely. I mean, when you're a teenager, you think you're all that and you know all that, and in a way that's how teens kind of figure out life, bumping around and pulling the china shop. And you know, every teen is different. There's some who are very placid and seem to, contain a gene pool loaded with poise and intelligence, and then there's me. No, I'm kidding. Then there's, there's just there's, teens are teens. So we will get that teen behavior that comes naturally with who they are. But that other layer that adoptive kids have and foster kids as well is that they are going through emotions, thoughts that seem to surface in waves that just don't make sense. And I've spoken with enough teen adoptees and older adoptees close enough to their teen years that they just don't know what's going on. I was with a panel of five adoptees last night at an event, and I was facilitating that. And I found it interesting that most of them would agree when they were younger teens that they brushed it off. And they realized, looking, back, that they shouldn't have brushed it off. This whatever, these waves of feelings that they would get or thoughts, because eventually it does come to the surface. And those who do, okay, maybe the word brushing off is for a group of people, but others respond differently because they don't want to open up because they're guarding their hearts. There's a wound that they do not have any interest in opening, nor do they know how to, and it's too scary. And like I think in the case of my angry 16-year-old son, I think he was both angry because he was growing and he had angry, bones and muscles and things that were, happening to him. But also I think he was afraid, and I can only sum it up, of losing us. I think he guards his heart, doesn't talk about it, but this is my own mommy perception, right? Is that he stays clear and keeps everything kind of hidden away, like a brick after brick has, created a wall around his heart to protect himself. He wants to protect his heart from breaking again. And I know maybe I'm off based on this. I'm not a therapist. I'm just a mom with some observations. But for my son, I think he ultimately is afraid of losing us. And that's too painful to think about and too scary to even go there. And so there's that, that layer. There's other layers, different, again, back to different adoptees process differently, and they respond to their loss differently. And that was, one experience that I can point to that says, yep, there's another layer there, and it can be hard.
Yeah. So my anger, I had no anger around adoption till I was 40. So that goes, and I wasn't, and I'm thinking now, ooh, was I angry at other stuff? No, I don't. I can remember a bits and pieces of anger, and a lot of so somebody tried to put something on adoption, talking to me the other day, and I just thought, shrinks are really bright people, and we can make they can make anything linked to anything. This wasn't a shrink, but it was so far off. It was so far off. But if I'd believed it, I could have been stuck with it. So this, you know, you talked about loss and you've talked about the wound. I didn't think I was wounded till I read The Primal Wound.
Mm.
And then I thought I was. And then I realized who I truly am is unwoundable. Who we all truly are is unwoundable. We feel wounded, but that central essence of who we are, I use this diamond metaphor. You can't wound a diamond.
Mm.
I have felt wounded, but I haven't been wounded. Feelings aren't facts.
Mm-hmm.
But this show is supposed to be about your experience, not mine.
No, I love that. And again, our kids are, I mean, I'm not saying my kids are wandering around the house brooding and angry. And I mean, they're living life and they're, you know, they all have driver's license and got jobs when they were 14 and 15 and 16. And they mow the lawn and they play basketball and ride mountain bikes and have friends and get into trouble. And, yeah. You know, they do all the normal things, but there's these waves that can come. And but, again, it's some yeah. are, it's a range. It's not, some aren't affected. Maybe you fall in that range. It's not as if you're not as affected, where others who may have more trauma or fetal alcohol syndrome. Maybe they even inherited some of the mental health issues, maybe a bipolar or some, you know, I don't know. I'm not a therapist, so it's hard to, you know, I just don't want to be specific and say this is the one thing. I think there's
no
range of responses, and that's what we have to remember.
There is. And I heard something, I've been listening to something today that fits in with your wave analogy, right? So you says that you use the word analogy, but you know, you said it comes in waves.
Mm-hmm.
So the waves, you know, it can be a force 10 gale, right? Mm-hmm. The waves are like 30 foot high and it's crashing and you know, it's doing severe damage to the stuff that it's crashing against. But right down at the, you know, at the bottom on the seabed is it all's calm, right?
Mm.
And mm-hmm. that's who we are. The waves is just the superficial stuff. The stuff on the surface, underneath, all is well. And that's why the waves do come and go.
Mm-hmm.
You've interviewed a load of adoptees between the ages of 15 and 30 for the book, which has given you a broader understanding into what's going on in adoptees' heads and hearts. And it's mm-hmm. broadened it out from your three. So you've gone from understanding of three kids to this broader group. How has that, or what have you learned from those conversations?
I've learned that these people are amazing, that they're resilient. The storytellers in my book had to confront feelings and thoughts. I learned it didn't always go so well. So the stories in the book are very authentic and they include the ups and downs. In this pursuit of stories, I also discovered this range of responses that I've been talking about, which validates what happened with me with my own kids. And I learned that each of them had advice to give. Like they looked in the rearview mirror at their teen years and they had advice to give, which I found was the greatest outcome of this, is that they were willing to use their voice as mentors to their younger teen counterparts. You know, they were willing to say, hey, I went through this. Here's what I did, or here's how I handled it, or here's how I didn't handle it well. And they came up with a lot of great advice. For example, they definitely, as I said earlier, said, don't brush it off. Even if you feel like you want to brush off these feelings, you know, try to engage. And then engaging, it may not mean they can do that with parents because maybe that relationship doesn't feel safe or they're just not ready to. Several adoptees said that I think this is very interesting, that they didn't want to hurt their parents' feelings. So they were concerned that if they brought something up, that parents would be hurt. And I think, I hope that that's not true. It could be. There are parents that I've spoken with that are afraid when their kids want to search for birth mom. They are concerned of the impact. I think that I learned that there are parents who do have their own set of fears, and some parents who are very confident in engaging, and others might be, unbeknownst to them, sending off signals to their kids that I don't think I'm cool with all this. So there's so much to learn in these stories. And I think another huge piece of advice to the teens is to find community. And meaning a lot of, they won't find it necessarily in high school, unless there's actually an adoption club in their high school. But there are groups online, like Families for Guatemalan Children, you know, these online groups. They have a whole section, a whole groups just dedicated to teens. There's like 1,200 teens and young adults in their 20s, maybe even 30s, that are in these online groups. And whether it's for Russia or the former Eastern, you know, Soviet Union countries, China, South Korea, Ethiopia. Some are generalized groups for any adoptee, whether you are adopted internationally, transracially, or domestically, or through foster care. It could be just an open sharing. I was at a university last night speaking with a student leader who has a club at this college, and she had 16 people come to their first meeting. You know, semesters are kicking off here in the United States, and so they had their first meeting, and she had 16 people come, and it was a collection, like the United Nations. It was a collection of adoptees, and they were so excited to find each other so that they could create community and be heard and be seen and be understood by each other. And so, yeah, that's probably a longer answer than you wanted, but it's just, there's so much advice pouring out of this book, not only for teens to learn from, but from parents, you know, for parents as well. Because I think when we get inside information from those who know, the people who live it, it wakes us up and gives us fresh perspective. And I think that can only be good.
Yeah. But yeah, the whole thing, you know, my favorite word actually is perspective.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to do with the podcast, is to share different people's perceptions and learnings. And because for me, when our perspective changes, that does all the hard work. Have you heard of Russian adoptees?
What's that?
So we've had the guy on the show a couple of times. So there's a young guy in Washington called David Chunk, who is in his mid-20s, and he is the founder of an organization called Russian Adoptees, and he's been on the show once on his own, and then he's a great guy. He said, can I bring my girlfriend on the show, because she's a Russian adoptee as well. So we did an episode, a second episode with the two of them, and I think, you know, when you said an adoption club in high school, I thought that's a great idea, you know. But them finding people, and I remember the excitement, my excitement. I went to a friend's 18th birthday party, so it's a long time ago, but I still remember it. I'm 55 now, so this friend of mine, Mike, had a girlfriend at the time called Tracy, who was adopted, and it was like we didn't talk for very long. I must admit, she was very pretty, and I was kind of slightly jealous of my friend Mike. But we talked a little bit about adoption stuff, and it's great to do it. It's great to be able to express it. I think the real world groups for me, and from what I've heard. Had an adoptee on the show a couple of weeks ago called Jessica Lucery. So she's adopted, and she's in, I don't know, she's a mom now, so she's in her 40s, I would guess. But she runs a mentoring community for one of the agencies. I can't remember. Oh, Spence Chaplin. Spence Chapin. And they do this, the mentoring, bringing adoptees together in different age range, but in the real world, not just online. And one of the slight things, some of the online groups that I've seen are full of people who are in real pain. And that brings everybody down. So I'll give you, yeah. So I was going to go talking, but we need to be aware. We need to be aware of that, because some of these groups are just full of people that are literally just, you know. So a mentor of mine talks about enthusiasm does for human beings what helium does for balloons, right? So the helium lifts the balloon up, enthusiasm lifts lifts the person that we're talking to.
Mm.
What the people are doing in one adoptee group that I found was like throwing the sandbags into the basket of the balloon to keep the balloon grounded and going absolutely nowhere. So we need to be aware of the emotional climate in these groups.
I would agree with that. Because it can happen on both ends. It can happen in the young adult groups, and it can happen in parent groups too. And I do believe that I would hope that the monitors, I think, is that what they're called? They monitor the conversations, that there would be some rules about that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And like every adoptee is different. Every adoptee group is different. Every adoptive parent group is different. Every parent group. It's the ones that I've seen. What happens is if you, I wasn't going to share this, but I will do now because I think it emphasizes the point. So I found a group and it had quite a positive title. I'm not going to name it. And I thought, oh, this will be great. This will be full of people that have been through some pain, like I've been through some pain. My pain, has been, I've got off very lightly, I would say, compared to most. But I have had some serious stuff about it. And so I joined this group, and there was this long, long email. Sorry, it was a Facebook group. There was a long post, and it was all darkness. And I thought there was going to be some light at the end. And there wasn't. Mm. The guy made some really interesting points. So I joined the group and I asked a question. I asked a question. Interesting points. I'm wondering if there's any lightness here, any hope in this bit. Mm. And people started coming for me, saying that I was invalidating what this chap had said. And so I tried to explain myself, and then they came back at me again. And then I realized, I've accidentally, inadvertently caused some upset here. So I will delete my comments before it causes anybody else any upset. I don't want to trigger anybody, right? And then the next comment came back after I deleted it, was a kind of a sneering comment about, see, he doesn't even have the courage of his own convictions. He's deleted his comment. I have ultimate courage of my convictions. That's not the issue. What the issue was, in this case, it was, the issue was that I'd caused some inadvertent upset. And these were people who were putting themselves out as mentors, and yet they were still, for me, far too in their own trauma to be seen to be for them to be leaders. It would be like somebody who is still clinically obese leading a Weight Watchers group.
Hmm.
Note of caution. Sorry, I took a long time to share that story. But I just think we need to be aware of the differences on these things.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I think a mentor voice is one that lifts people up, that they're using their own experience as a way to encourage. And I think that there are people out there who aren't able to do that yet.
Yes.
And get caught up in some of the some of the sharing, looking for someone to commiserate with. But I don't have a lot of experience in that, so I don't want to speak, into that too much.
I've seen the good stuff, and I've seen the not so good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a lady, a young ambassador mentor on with her. So she, you know, she's a young person, ex an adoptee, and from adoption with the exec director of Adoption Canada, and they've done some great work in terms of mentoring and ambassadors, and for me, this Jessica with Spence Chapin, these people are doing some stunning work, and it's an option that really needs more showcasing, because other than the kind of the therapy route, but therapy is not for everybody. So we need adoptive parents and adoptees need more options, and they need more communities to connect with people. So, you know, bluntly put, so they don't think they're going nuts. You know, I thought I was going nuts. And sharing, when we can see other people have navigated the rubbish that we've been through and come out the other side, that's the stuff that lifts us up. That's where the hope is, seeing people that have come through the other side. So that's the sort of mentors that we want. You know, the fact that you've, you know, I take my hat off to you, that you found these adoptees to come forward and to share their stories with you, I think it's a fantastic achievement for them and for you.
I love their hearts. They were ready to speak their stories. And I think it's really important to say the conversations in this book, which are interviews, are very organic. There's no set agenda per se to chase after something I was looking for. It was a open, healthy conversations that, again, I mentioned this earlier, that talked about the ups and downs, and these people were real, and they were intelligent. They were they felt secure in themselves at this stage and were successful in becoming who God made them to be. And that's why I think they stepped into this opportunity, this project. It wasn't like I went after looking just for a certain type of individual to be in this book. I mean, the people who participated in this book are from all over the United States. So not just where I'm from, but from all over the place.
Yeah.
So I love that, because it gives light to the fact that, you know, there's truth in these stories, because it's from them and not from me. Yeah. So
I'm conscious of time. I sometimes like to ask this question, Susan. What's the question that I've not asked? What's close to your heart in terms of this adoption part of your life? What's a topic that I've not asked you about, or something that you
Well, you've asked me a lot of wonderful questions, and I think just to add to like what we've already spoken about is that, for me, just the idea that when I first started this book, that I was hoping to offer a gift to my teens and to adopted teens and young adults, to give them, you know, a community and the vocabulary and so on. But then it became clear that it was going to help parents as well. And, you know, getting that inside scoop prepares us for the conversations we could hopefully have and helps us to become the safe one so our kids open up. And again, all kinds of understanding can lead to compassion. And for me, you know, that's where, I mean, I don't know if I've answered your question or came up with a question, but those things kind of still are at my heart. You know, those are the things that have been the reason for creating this book.
So. Okay. So I'm going to go with another question, which I don't ask very often, but it just feels right to ask it now. What would you like to call this episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. That's a good question. What do you want to call it? You're pretty clever. What?
Oh, I'm laughing modestly. The reason I asked the question is because I love the two of the words that you just used, or three of the words that you just used. And those words were inside scoop and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, the inside scoop on adopted teens is kind of the first thing that popped into my head. But you know, you the other way would be compassion for adopted teens. Mm-hmm. Was the other one. We'll see. What do you think of those? Do those kind of
even a whole idea of if your audience is for parents, then to be able to say, you know, some sort of how to gain confidence in parenting your adopted teens or something like that. I don't know.
Okay. Something how about like, parenting your with adopted confidence. Teens with confidence and compassion.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
Okay.
Do you like it?
I like it, yeah. I like it. And the big one for me, you know, you've mentioned the heart word a lot. You've talked about thriving emotionally. You've used the word compassion. You used the word love language a bit earlier. Compassion is the key word.
Mm-hmm.
For me. And actually, I would say my title was a bit long. So the latest version of the title is Parenting Your Adopted Teen with Compassion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking of when I'm creating the little graphic. Anyway, last question. Have you got a question for me?
Is this being recorded or just for fun?
this is being recorded. I can stop it if you want.
Oh no, that's okay. No, I was just gonna ask a fun question. No, yeah, I'm just kidding. No, like my question for you would be, do you know Dan Stevens? No.
Yeah, I know Dan Stevens.
Huh?
I know Dan Stevens.
Yeah, you know he's adopted, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just kind of knew because you were from the UK. I was like,
no, I don't. I know a guy called Dan Stevens. I think I know a guy called Dan Stevens, but he's not adopted.
Oh, okay. So the actor Dan Stevens.
Oh, right. Okay. No, I don't know. I'm sorry.
He's adopted. He's from, yeah, you know, the UK. And I think he's from Sussex, or his parents are, but
okay, right, I'll check. Yeah.
I don't know, I just brought that up, that's why you can cut that from the whole thing, but I just
I don't edit anything. I'm gonna get Dan Stevens on the show.
I would love that. he probably would.
Okay, Do you know him?
Yeah. Do I know him?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Right. I was going to use your name to try and get through. Anyway, so I want to finish with something going back to you, Susan. So I started to watch this last night. So listeners, please check out Susan's book. And also, please check out, I'm going to put a link in the show notes, as I always do, to people's socials, right? So Susan was talking about an event that she did. And there's a video of that event just going up on your Facebook page, isn't there?
Right, yes.
Yeah. So what's the event?
The event was a panel of adoptees who we spoke at a local bookstore to about 60 people who came to learn more about the book and about the insides of the pages and to actually hear from several storytellers firsthand. So these were young adults who lived in the general vicinity of where this event was happening. So I was able to call them in and they agreed to come and speak. So it's kind of cool.
That is very cool. The number of people that you got, the fact that they came forward and the fact that you got that audience is, I'm going to take my hat off to you on that. I only just saw the first bit of the video and it looked really intriguing. So I'm going to go watch it now. And I'd urge you to check it out, listeners, if what Susan said has made sense for you. And I also want to point you to Susan's website, because on there, she's got two really cool documents to go with the book. So there's a guide for teens and there's a guide for parents. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's what I remembered looking at when I looked at the website this morning, yesterday, I can't remember when. And I thought that's a great thing. Those were two great things to do. So why did you do those documents, Susan?
Because I think that we read sometimes and we don't think about what we read. And so I felt it was a good way to help teenagers and young adults process what they were reading and to create conversations that would maybe help them come up with vocabulary they need to talk about their own story. And then the one for parents is just just offering conversation starters that dig deeper into how can we make a difference as parents in some of, given that these stories are being told and we're given all this great insight, so that, when you sit down in a book, maybe you're having a group of moms and dads together, and you're going through the book, the conversations are amazing. And that supportive group being together and talking about these stories. I'm doing a small group right now there's eight of us, and we come together and share personal happenings in our homes with our kids, whether they're teens or young adults, but also just how we're doing. And then looking at the inside scoop of these stories, just being blown away by what we're learning and how we can respond differently to our kids. So it's the documents are worth grabbing and they're free. So yeah. There's no commitment.
Brilliant. We're going to bring it in there. Susan, can you just stay on the call? I'm just going to end the recording now. So thanks a lot, listeners, and we will speak to you very soon. And thank you, Susan. Sorry, I should say thank you. What sort of, she said I was bright, but obviously not being a charming English gentleman today. Thanks a lot, Susan.
You're welcome.